The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Did you know that 779 horses were killed at races in Ireland between 2012 and 2017? 562 at race courses, 217 at point-to-point events. The peak being 121 horses dying in 2013. That's when it comes to horses. Then did you know with greyhounds, that greyhound racing, which is being banned now in many countries around the world, but that some Irish greyhounds are exported to China, where when they can no longer run in races, can be boiled alive for their meat. Those are just some things. And of course, we all know about coursing. Coursing has changed a bit in recent years, but coursing still involves dogs chasing a hare to make it turn or change direction. Very few hares get killed now, but there is a rate of attrition and there is great trauma, it is believed, to the hares, 7,000 of which can be used annually by coursing clubs. We should say the Irish Coursing Club was invited to participate in this item but has declined. But we do have representatives from greyhounds and horse racing with us. I want to start though with the independent TD Maureen O'Sullivan, who's in the studio with us here on The Last Word on Today FM, because you have long used your platform in Dáil Éireann to campaign for animal rights. How serious an issue do you regard this as being when it comes to sport and the use of animals?
Okay, well, I think there's a terrible irony in the fact that we have banned the use of wild animals for entertainment purposes in circuses. And yet we have an animal like the hare, which is an iconic animal in our culture. And it is being tortured and it is being badly treated. And there are deaths in 2016 into 2017. There were over 20, the same in 2018. We also know from the National Park and Wildlife Services, we know from the organisations like ICABS, the number of injuries and through mauling and tossing of the hare. This is an industry where hares are suffering. And we have the evidence of that. And yes, it continues. And there is an alternative, drag hare coursing, but we're not even prepared to consider it.
What about greyhounds? Because you've been very involved in the legislation that has gone through the Dáil in relation to greyhounds. What are your concerns there?
My concerns with greyhounds is, as you said, is on the export of greyhounds to places like China, to Pakistan, to India. And we do know that on a particular Chinese website, there's information about Irish greyhound owners, the greyhounds who have been registered for racing here and who are now available for breeding in these countries. We know those countries have no animal welfare legislation, no guidelines whatsoever. And we know it's the rescue groups who are taking them from those places. I've met some of those greyhounds, the lucky ones who got back to Ireland. And did you know that recently they didn't want these rescued greyhounds to come back to Ireland? Such was our attitude towards greyhounds in this country.
Okay, John Carmody is with us as well, animal rights correspondent and campaigner. He joins us from our Spin Southwest studio in Limerick. John, what about the horses? This is Aintree Grand National Week, which ironically actually is a race which has, I suppose, cleaned up its act in recent years, doesn't have the level of fatalities it once had. But horse racing remains a sport in which there is a degree of attrition for the horses.
Yeah, a good point, Matt. But I think like there's a shelf life, if you want to put it, on these types of industries. For instance, dog racing and horse racing, and even hare coursing, as Maureen alluded to as well. But in relation to horse racing, I mean, most people that would be going into the bookies and placing their bets would have no idea, unless they're seeing these horses jumping over the fences and them snapping their necks or breaking their legs, and all of a sudden the cameras zoom away from what's going on and it goes back to the presenter, because the public and the people who bet on these races don't get to see what happens. But finally, we're turning a corner. Maureen just also alluded to the fact that we've been able to get the use of animals out of circuses here. But not only just that, we have a fantastic animal health and welfare bill. We've seen a puppy farmer being jailed in the last couple of weeks for nearly 3 years, I think, for horrendous cruelty to animals. And now more than ever before, more people are becoming more aware of cruelty to animals. Back in the 90s, we found it very hard as campaigners to get our message out to people. We had to send them VHS tape cassettes to show them what was going on with, for instance, with horse racing and fur farms and circuses, that kind of thing. But in this day and age, with one click of a button onto Facebook, Twitter or YouTube, people can see this cruelty for themselves. So these industries are finding it very hard to battle that.
John, there would be a lot of people who would say that horses, and let's just stay with horses for the moment. We'll get to greyhounds in a moment. but that horses are particularly well cared for in this country, that great love and affection is shown to them, and that actually, if you didn't have them racing, you actually wouldn't have a lot of these thoroughbreds being even born in the first place.
Well, we can absolutely spend all our time talking about the horse racing industry, but whatever way you cut it, Matt, there's suffering, and wherever animals are used, corners will always be cut. We heard the same very arguments about the use of animals in circuses, and for years, again back in the 90s and early 2000s, we had to almost plead with people to try understand what it was that we had to say about elephants not belonging in chains or tigers not belonging in rusty cages where they'd have to pace back and forth until those poor creatures were brought out into bright lights and loud music. But with the horse racing industry, most people only get to see these beautiful horses running on the race tracks, and they probably wouldn't see that there's probably nothing wrong with that. But the reality is there is. Where all these animals are used, there's a huge amount of breeding. A lot of these horses don't even get to make the grade to get them on the tracks to race. So a lot of those animals end up in a downward spiral. A lot of the times they're, you know, used for meat, that kind of thing.
All right, look, let's get people in to defend the various sports. Gerard Dollard, you're Chief Executive of Irish Greyhound Racing. And I've got one message here from a listener who says, greyhounds owned in Ireland, when they're not needed anymore or they don't win, they get sent to Spain where they can finish their careers in dreadful conditions. A petition has been sent to the minister. It seems to be a major issue, not necessarily with the treatment of dogs here in Ireland, but what happens to them when they get exported?
Yeah, good evening, Matt. I suppose, firstly, just to say that greyhound racing does not use a live hare. It's an artificial lure that goes around the track, just to clarify that particular point. Maureen raised the issue of exports, which you raised yourself, and certainly we would share some of the concerns which have been raised. We have a very clear view in relation to exported greyhounds. They should only be exported to countries that have a good welfare regime, a good regulatory regime. We've done a lot of work on this, and I would have spoken to Maureen personally on this when I was in the Dáil there recently. The issue of exports needs to be dealt with not just at a European level, but at a world trade level. And currently, animal welfare is not recognised as a trade consideration. So, for example, I could export a greyhound today to the UK, and then it could be exported to any part of the world after it goes to the UK. The Irish Greyhound Board has no role in relation to exports, so we can't stop somebody exporting a dog. And certainly when it leaves this country, where it ends up after that, it's not monitored. So we would be very strong in our advice to greyhound owners, and we are aware of some greyhound owners who have, I would say, perhaps been duped, but dogs have been found in China, which they never intended would go to China. We've been very strong to ask greyhound owners to ensure if they are exporting a dog, they should only export it to a country that has a very good welfare regime.
Because, and I think this may be very upsetting to many listeners who are going to hear the details of what happens. It has been reported, Gerard, that these greyhounds actually get boiled alive for their meat after they've been shipped to China.
Yeah, I've read some of that type of report on the internet myself, Matt, and I suppose it is fair to say that there are countries that have certain cultures and certain approaches to welfare, which we would not in any way condone.
Well, if you love dogs, and I presume the vast majority of greyhound owners do actually have a love for their dogs, would actually hate to think of dogs that they've cared for been treated like that.
Absolutely, and as I say, one or two of them we know of have been duped in terms of their dog has ended up somewhere it shouldn't be. The vast majority of greyhound owners are passionate about greyhound racing, and from what I have seen, most of the owners treat their greyhounds better than nearly they treat their own children. That's the level of care and attention and interest that they have.
But then again, some don't. What about injuries to dogs? Because how much of an issue? We heard about injuries to horses and they gave the figures. I have UK figures for the number of dogs who were destroyed at trackside. I think 257 in 2017. What about here in Ireland? Yeah. Do we have an attrition rate for our dogs?
We have published stats in relation to injuries and dogs put to sleep. But just on your point about some greyhound owners don't care for their dogs, I mean, I think you can take any industry and there'll be a small percentage that don't abide by the rules as they should. And that's why we have a very strong welfare function. We did nearly 500 kennel inspections last year. We had 46 welfare investigations. So I would encourage people, if they are aware of mistreatment of greyhounds, well, they should report it to the IGB and it will be investigated. On the injury data, as I say, we published the injury data. Last year, we had about 1,600 or 16,000 races, which was about 94,000 runners, if you could call it that. We had 353 injuries. And of some of those injuries, the dogs obviously certainly would race again. And we had 121 greyhounds that were put down. That's a vast improvement in 2017, and it's a vast improvement in 2016. So So I think the welfare regime is getting even better in terms of the number of injuries and dogs being put down. And with a sport like greyhound racing, which is, I suppose, built on speed and athleticism, unfortunately, you are going to have some level of injuries in a sport like that.
What about Richard Forrestal, the editor of the Racing Post in Ireland? Richard, a question came up at our production meeting today discussing why are so many horses put down when they actually have accidents on the race course? Can they not be saved if you have an event of a broken leg or some injury like that?
Generally speaking, Matt, everything possible is done to save horses that are that incur injuries. But because they're such large animals, they're 500 kg animals, and they race on very light limbs. They're extremely fragile in that respect. So for all the power and strength that they have, because their limbs are the way they are, I mean, they're built for speed. Ultimately, they can't carry the weight that's required during a recuperation period. So that is why there is a slightly higher fatality rate. But I mean, to be honest, it's I'd roll back on that a little bit, because the fatality rate in England is 0.22%. In Britain, that's less than a quarter of 1%. It's slightly higher here, but only fractionally. It's still less than 0.5% here. You're talking about, I mean, in England last year, for example, there was 93,000 runners and you ended up with 200 deaths. And those of us involved in the industry, I suppose, we look at those figures and we accept that there is going to be a certain level of fatalities. You cannot eliminate risk when you are dealing with horses of this size and the nature of the game. And your one of your earlier commentators, John, there commented that you know the debts are hidden out of sight and so on. That's not the case. I mean, it's corresponded quite well, the fatality rates. And he also suggested that corners are cut within the industry. And I would say in Ireland, especially, the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board and HRA police the industry very well from a welfare point of view here. And there's a lot of inspections, unannounced inspections on yards. The thing you've got to go back to here, Matt, is that thoroughbreds have been selectively bred for over 300 years to do this job. They're fantastic specimens. They're the most powerful and majestic athletes you'll ever encounter. But they're also extremely expensive to sustain because they have such a high metabolism and so on. So they won't exist viably without the racing side of things. They need that industry there to sustain them. There just wouldn't be a sufficient economic basis without racing. So, I mean, anyone who wants to get rid of racing is ultimately signing the death warrant of the thoroughbred. That's just the way it is. They, because they're so expensive, you have to have this economic benefit that makes them viable. And remember as well, they're the only farm animals that are not raised for slaughter. They live incredibly luxurious existences. People devote their whole time, their whole lives to caring for them, and the facilities are top class. I mean, they're among the best treated domesticated animals you will ever encounter. And also worth noting that thoroughbreds love racing. I mean, I've worked in yards, you know, when I was younger, and horses would be kicking the door to get out to do their job. They thoroughly enjoy the game. But unfortunately, because they are the size they are, and if they sustain a bad fracture, it means that they can be hard to save. That's an unfortunate fact, but it's something we all live with. And all industries, in, you know, in the top countries in the world, in Britain and Ireland and America and so on, they're always striving to reduce the mortality rate and improve welfare conditions. But at the end of the day, there's only so much you can do. You can't legislate for everything. Horses will fall and there will be deaths. But as I say, it's to me and to most people who are familiar with the sport, it's an acceptable level of deaths, relatively speaking. No one likes to see it. But because of the nature of the game, you're going to have it. It is less than 0.5% of the overall runners. And we think that's acceptable.
I want to bring in Dr. Ben Metcalf, who's a researcher at the University of Bath, because I believe you have technology, a new device, which you believe could help horse welfare. Tell us about it, please, Ben.
Hi, thank you for speaking to me today. So we've been developing a new wearable sensor here at the University of Bath. And our basic idea is we wanted to take, for example, the Fitbit, the kind of wearable tech we have for humans, and start applying this to equine athletes.
And how does it work?
So what we imagine is that we'll have one or two different sensors attached to the horse. So these might be on the boots, for example, on the legs, or potentially attached to the saddle. And we're going to be monitoring various vital signs, so heart rate and breathing, and also the movement of the animal. And we'll be using this to determine their health and well-being throughout all aspects of their sort of competitive performance.
But how will that actually help them? Because aren't the owners just going to send them out to win anyway? And if they're not going to win, they might send these animals off to the scrapyard.
Well, I think what we've realised is animals are very good at hiding illnesses from us. You know, horses can be really in a lot of pain before they will show symptoms or go lame. And we're really interested in, can we catch some of these problems early before they might be visible to the trainers or owners? And by doing that, can we stop the sort of potential fatalities or very serious injuries that happen later on?
But do those fatalities and injuries become because of the nature of the falls while jumping fences or whatever, rather than actually inbuilt injuries or illnesses?
Well, I think the answer is, at the moment, we don't really know. So if a horse happens to fall at a fence, you know, potentially this is because they've tripped, but potentially this could have been a heart issue or a heart attack before the fall, and it's really very difficult for us to tell. And we don't have this kind of technology in use at the moment, and I think there's a lot we can learn if we're able to monitor the animals continuously.
Dr. Ben Medcalf from the University of Bath, thank you very much for joining us. Now, I have lots of things I want to get to our panel in relation to. Gerard Dollard, I'm going to go back to you, though, briefly, because I know you have to leave as Chief Executive of Irish Greyhound Racing. Is greyhound racing just going to become a sport here, do you think, in Ireland and Britain, the way the international trends are going? Banned in Argentina, it's going to be banned in Florida from 2021, banned in Canberra in Australia. New South Wales has put big restrictions on allowing the sport to continue. Is it going out of favour?
I think greyhound racing, Matt, has been running in Ireland for nearly 100 years now. I think it's an intrinsic part of the social, cultural and certainly the economic life of the country. Certainly we have 16 greyhound tracks. There are a lot of people out there who are involved in the industry. We have actually seen some growth in the industry in the last number of months in terms of greyhound pools. So I certainly think the interest is there. It's a great night's entertainment. People do enjoy it. So I certainly see greyhound racing there for the long term.
Maureen O'Sullivan, Independent TD. I know you're particularly exercised by the idea of coursing and you're worried about what happens to the greyhounds once they're exported. Do you have any objections to greyhound racing as a sport here in Ireland?
Well, it's the lesser of two evils is what I would say about that. But there's one anomaly, which is that greyhound owners to register their greyhounds, they have to register with them the Irish Coursing Club. And even though there are a lot of greyhound owners who don't want their greyhounds coursing and they don't agree with coursing, but that's where the fee goes. And I've tried to address that not very well. Hopefully we might with this greyhound bill at the moment. Now, I had amendments in. I was with the committee last week. I'm not on that committee, but I was able to attend it with the amendments. And they were all about trying to protect the greyhounds from being exported to countries like the Chinas and the Pakistans. None of those amendments were accepted. And the basic line seemed to be, well, it's very difficult to implement. But all legislation is difficult to implement unless you put the resources into it. So it was very disappointing because we know greyhounds that don't make the cut, where are they going to go? And unfortunately, that's the reality for many of them, that they do end up in those dreadful places.
OK, I want to go back to our animal rights campaigner down in our Spin Southwest studio in Limerick. John Carmody, Ellen sends in an interesting message. She says, at least animals in sport are trained and fed well, not on some sugar-based jelly meat goo confined to a tiny back garden, pining all day for company, as is the fate of thousands of domestic dogs. What do you say to that, John?
I've heard that one for years. And you know what? Suffering is suffering, whatever way you cut it, Matt. And I think whether it's a dog or a cat or the poor elephant in the chains or the poor, you know, orca whale swimming around those concrete tanks at SeaWorld or the poor heroes running for their, you know, in the course in compounds, all these animals are sentient beings, which is something that we forget, as a matter of fact. We got it when it comes to the dogs and the cats. We got it when, you know, we know that they want to experience love and affection and they want to be free of pain and suffering. But when it comes down to the horses and the hares and those other animals that are at times running for their lives, we seem to overlook that. But I just want to go back to your caller who had this kind of an invention for some kind of animal welfare thing with regards to horse racing, and he says that so animals can't tell us how they feel. And you know what? He's absolutely right, because I wish at times during debates like this that we could bring an animal on and that we could ask him or her to say how they feel, because at the end of the day, horses can't go home after a race, throw themselves down on the couch and crack open a can of beer. So that's something that we do miss.
Okay,
for sure.
But Sandra in Cullinamuck in County Galway also says, John, I'm not a fan of horse racing, but I love horses. If we lose the racing industry, we lose the beautiful thoroughbreds, as we've lost all our heavy horses once haulage and farm work was mechanised. We do need to police the industry effectively, though. But John, that's the point that Sandra makes, which others have made. If you don't have things like the horse racing sport, you simply won't have the horses. There has to be an economic incentive for people to have and pay for these horses. And if you don't have that, you simply won't have any horses. There'll be none living.
We will. We absolutely will. And I think...
Fraction, John, of the numbers who do live at present in Ireland.
Those industries, like it or not, there's a shelf life on them. And let me tell you this, we've had some of the world's top designers, designers that we probably wouldn't have thought in my lifetime that would have given up using fur, and they've stopped. They've given up animal exotic skins. We've seen the Ringling Brothers in the USA ending their use of all animals. We've seen designers going for free, animal testing being replaced with humane, modern tests. Whether they like it or not, people are seeing what's going on behind the scenes in this place. And more than anything else, young people in this day and age want nothing got to do with those types of industries anyway. Even coursing that Maureen just spoke about, they're having problems down there in Clonmel every year trying to bring in young people. They just don't want to be in there.
They still get about 40,000 people over 3 days down there.
That's debatable in terms of the numbers, but I know a lot of those people because I was in those coursing places many times over the years myself, and I see a lot of these young ones and they're withered. They just don't want to be there. They're on their phones and they're on their Facebook and their Twitter and they're communicating with their friends. There's simply no appetite for these young people to be involved in these industries anymore, and I can assure you we look back in years to come and we won't have these industries, and it's not in many ways, it'll be because people will just see it for what it is.
Okay, Richard Forrestal, editor of the Racing Post in Ireland. Just how many people are employed in the horse breeding and horse racing sector in Ireland? How many people actually go to the racing events? What's it worth to the Irish economy?
It's worth a lot of money to the Irish economy, Matt. Just before I answer that, Matt, could I just respond quickly to John's comment about the fashion industry surviving without fur and so on? And he's right in that respect. But the thoroughbreds exist specifically for racing and they've been selectively bred for over 300 years for that purpose. They exist within an ecosystem that makes them viable, and without racing, the breed would not survive. It's as simple as that. It's basic economics.
And what about the horses for jumping, for the hurdles?
That's the same thing, Mark.
Thoroughbred
racing, yeah.
I was thinking more of the thoroughbreds for the class one, for the flat racing and stuff, but it's the same, is it, for the jump horses?
Same thoroughbreds. Thoroughbreds exist explicitly for racing. Now, they might go on to other careers subsequently, but they're too highly strung to do anything else.
And what about the horses for the point-to-points? Are they different?
All thoroughbreds, Matt. All thoroughbreds.
Well.
Yeah. It goes back to three stallions, very briefly, the Darley Arabian, the Godolphin Arabian, and the Byerly Turk. Over 300 years ago, they started breeding for them, and we ended up with the thoroughbred, which is what we have now, bred for speed and power. You get rid of racing, you get rid of them. He's talking about sports having a shelf life. He's giving the thoroughbreds a shelf life if he wants to get rid of racing. They will not exist beyond without it.
How big is the industry in Ireland? How many people does it employ? All those things.
Yeah, 10,000. Deloitte did a report 2 years ago, Matt. 10,000 people employed in the core racing and breeding industries. Another 20,000 indirectly in secondary industries. It's a massive intrinsic part of rural life in this country. There was over 370 million traded in racing and breeding exports. So it's a huge contributor to the economy. But and it's known, of course, as we all know, as the sport of kings. But it's much more than that. I mean, people like myself, you know, hobby traders with a couple of horses out in the back. You look at the figures, Matt, 6,200. That's 92% of the breeders in the country have fewer than 5 broodmares. So there's little pockets of it, little cottage industries all over the country. If you want to get rid of that, good luck to you, because, you know, you're going to face an awful lot of resistance.
Okay. Richard, there's also a listener says the reason why a lot of horses are put down is because the insurers pay out when a horse is put down, but they won't actually pay for the very expensive costs of treating and looking after an injured horse.
Those instances would be fairly rare, Matt. The people who deal with these horses, they live and breed them. And if there's any prospect of saving them, they do. I mean, you'll see expensive, highly valuable stallions over the years. One that springs to mind was St. Nicholas Abbey that they couldn't save, and he would have been worth multiples of millions to Coolmore, but they couldn't save him. Everything is done to save these animals, but it's just the physics of it, because of their size often and so on, you just can't do anything about
okay.
it. And what has life will die, Matt, that's inevitable, and there is always an a certain level of risk, which I think everyone within the industry is always striving to improve, but you just cannot simply eliminate it. It won't go away.
What numbers are going to the horse racing now? Are they falling? Are the numbers going to actual races around the country falling off?
That has happened to a degree, Matt, over the years, but it has leveled out in recent years. I'll tell you why it happened. There was one, I think 1.25 million was the figure on record in Ireland for 2018. That has happened because racing is now largely available on television or on your phone or whatever. As you know, many years ago, the only place to watch a race was in the bookies or going to the races themselves. So there isn't the same need for people to go to the sports now. But there's a huge following here. There's 900.
Richard, that's another issue. A lot of people think that the only reason the sports exists is actually to keep the bookmakers going. That is just a gambling pursuit.
Well, they are related, Matt. There's no two ways about that. But the racing, as I say, it's an intrinsic part of the rural lifestyle in this country. And people such as myself care passionately about it without having any massive interest in gambling. You don't have to have the interest in gambling to be interested in racing. They exist together, but they're not mutually.
Okay.
You know,
actually, I'm told that we actually do still have Gerard Dollard from Irish Greyhound Racing with us. There's a listener suggests that the taxpayers have paid about 240 million over to the greyhound racing industry since the turn of the century. Will that be right?
I don't know if that figure is actually right, but we do get an annual grant to the Horse and Greyhound Fund from the department.
Of how much?
And, this year is 16.8 million.
16.8 million?
Yeah, and the bulk of that goes out in prize money to support the industry, to support owners, breeders, trainers. So there's
a few industries get that type of benefit. Well, I suppose the horse racing one gets an enormous amount as well, but that's a lot of money to help you stand on your own 2 feet.
Well, it's a significant amount of money to keep an industry which is in all parts of Ireland. You were asking there about horse racing. We got Jim Power Economics to do a study of the greyhound industry in 2017. It was estimated 5,000 direct and indirect jobs, 7,300 owners, and an economic impact of just under 300 million. So it is a significant industry. Some of its money, I suppose, is derived, which you mentioned there, from betting. So there's betting duties going back into the exchequer. So it's about keeping the economic activity, the social activity and the passion for the greyhound racing going for those who are interested in it, both to take part in it and to watch it as a spectator sport.
OK. Just to go back to you, John Carmody, people are saying as well, and not just that thing that came up earlier about domestic animals and how they're treated, but horses, for example, they're far worse off if they've been run around on roads and sulkies and things like that than if they've been actually cared for with proper vets, proper health care effectively for them, and love of affection in stables, as happens all over the country.
It's a good question, madam. I've heard that one as well for many years. And just because one horse is probably starving in a wet field on a dark, cloudy day towards a horse that is running for literally its life, I suppose. There's no difference, and I mean, we can never see into the minds of these animals who would suffer psychologically, and that's the other thing that we forget as well. We come back to dogs and cats again, because we got it when it comes to that. But I just want to go back in relation to when your caller said that these industries are huge, and they absolutely are, and I got it when it comes down to the amount of people that are employed in these industries, and he said we'll come up against fierce opposition when that time does come. But let me tell you this, the opposition you're going to come up against is the people on the streets, the people who look at the investigations, the people who see the suffering and to see the cruelty and to see everything else that goes on behind the scenes when we're using these animals, and people see it for what it is. So whether they like it or not, it's not going to be me or anyone else. It's going to be the public that at the end of the day will make this decision. Also on that as well, we have been using animals for hundreds of years. As a matter of fact, in many ways, we become obsessed with animals, but it's now finally we're turning a corner and we're starting to question all these industries. And in Little Ireland, a time when I first started out in animal rights, I wouldn't have thought that we have a fantastic animal health and welfare bill. We have a ban that brought in the use of animals in circus, wild animals in circuses.
Okay, well,
we've got humane
that,
badger control, and there's now only 3-4 farms left in this country.
All right,
we're talking
that,
about veganism.
We're out of time. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I'm not getting into veganism now. Sorry, John. John Carmody, thank you for joining us. Maureen O'Sullivan, Independent TD. Richard Forrestal, for editor of The Racing Post. And Gerard Dollard, Chief Executive of Irish Greyhound Racing.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.